See, if you just go, like, open the Finder, it should be on the left, like, your name. You know, applications, documents, and it should be, like, Doug Klinger, whatever you signed up as.
So it should be in the Finder? I don't see this Finder, I don't think. Maybe I'm looking at the wrong thing.
Well, where
applications, documents. God, I feel like such a noob. What? It is a great day to listen about music videos, isn't it?
It is. This is episode 3 of season 2. We've been having a lot of good season so far.
We have been having a good season so far, I think.
And, you know, one of the things I wanted to do as we progress is kind of talk about some different topics within music videos, because the more you dig, you know, music videos are not something people talk about a lot, but once you dig, there are a lot of interesting topics, and oh man, I have a fantastic one for us this week.
Oh, what is it?
It's product placement in music videos.
Product placement in music videos, huh? That's
I wanted to talk about this for a while.
I like whenever I think of product placement, I always think of Wayne's World.
Good
and
one.
Like that one scene. Yeah, it's a great scene when
it's a taste of a new generation.
Yeah, it's just like a million product placements. It's like such a Mike Myers joke, but it's like, it is, yeah. That's always what I'll think of with product placement.
Now, here's an interesting thing, because a lot of times we've been talking about how taking music videos, the internet has changed the industry and changed music videos, and product placement is an area where it has definitely changed music videos. Because I was not aware of this, but did you know that MTV's official stance is that it does not allow product placement in their videos, official product placement.
I'm not surprised by that, because I always notice MTV blurring out Nike logos on rappers' t-shirts a big time back in the 90s. Like some of the old, like, Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre videos, like, they would actually have to blur out actual stuff. Like, there's scenes where they're like pulling down girls' bikini tops and stuff like that, and that stuff would get blurred, and then they'd be blurring some guy in the background's Nike t-shirt. And I always like would think as a kid, like, oh, what's on that guy's t-shirt? I bet you it's a naked girl. And really, it's like clearly a Nike check now, looking back to it. It's like, man, that's a girl. So no, I'm not surprised at all when you say that to me.
Well, that's something that I never made the connection with, but it makes sense, because it's sort of free, you know, they're sort of, in a way, they're selling ad space on MTV, because they're showing the video. But, you know, in the recent, you know, 5 years, 10 years, you know, what have you, now that music videos have moved off the MTV channel and onto the internet, it's sort of been open season for that kind of thing. And actually, just recently, I'd say within the last 2 years or so, since 2009, people have started noticing and talking about you know, product placement in music videos a little bit more. And the one that they always cite over and over is the Beyonce Lady Gaga video for Telephone. Have you seen this video?
I have not. I guess I'm not cutting edge. Tell me, where's the product placement in this video?
Well, there's a lot of very overt product placement. If it's kind of a Thelma and Louise type video narrative where Beyonce and Lady Gaga kind of break out of prison. I haven't seen the video in a while, so I may not be explaining this right. But anyway, they're sort of outlaws on the run. It's a pretty entertaining video, but there's a lot of sort of overt product placement. For instance, when one of the guards of the prison is on plentyoffish.com, the dating website, there is Miracle
specifically. They like show the URL and stuff.
Oh yeah. Well, they don't show the URL. I don't think you can really see it, but they show the homepage You can see very clearly that it's planned, and it's very explicit. They kind of, you know, linger on it for a minute. Lady Gaga makes a sandwich with Miracle Whip and Wonder Bread. Their Virgin Mobile is all over the place in the music video. And I think there is...
I gotta see this video.
Well, the thing is, it's kind of having fun with it a little bit. The product placement is very overt.
Having so much fun with all that money that they got from Virgin Mobile.
Right. Well, the interesting thing is that most of those things were actually unpaid. Because people would watch the video and they would say, oh my God, all this product placement. But it turns out that Wonder Bread did not pay a dime to be in the music video. They just wanted to use Wonder Bread. Virgin Mobile did not explicitly pay any money to be in the video, but they sponsored Lady Ball's Monster Ball tour, which was going out at the same time the video was
being made. Lady Balls is what you called her?
No, Monster. I called Lady Monster Ball.
You said Lady Ball's Monster Ball. I'm sorry, that threw me off so much. Because Aren't there rumors that Lady Gaga's got man parts?
Yeah, oh, a long time ago, or like
she has lady balls. I'm sorry, dude.
I gotta listen back to that.
Save this podcast for me. No, but I will say this: videos like that have really kind of blurred the line to where, it's all a result of the internet. And I find that, you know, it might be a result of me spending too much time on Twitter and, like, reading things that these artists and directors say and thinking that it's so significant. Or maybe it really is. Like, you know, our podcast is very much about the internet's influence on music videos as anything, because, you know, all the music videos are on the internet. And, you know, these product placements in these videos really has... Because they're now on the internet and don't have this MTV rule, it's really blurred the lines. So, like, remember that Weezer thing that you tweeted for State Farm?
Yeah, oh my God.
That's State Farm. And now there's Method Man just did one for Sour Patch Kids.
What? And,
yeah, there's a Method Man song with Sour Patch Kids. They actually talked about it today on Video Gum. It's like a full song, like two verses and two choruses. And he basically is like talking about if you leave uneaten Sour Patch Kids, what they're capable of. Cause you know, like the Sour Patch Kids ad campaign now is like sweet or sour than sweet. So like a Sour Patch Kid, like punch you in the face and then like hug you after. So it's like all of these Sour Patch Kids, like wreaking havoc based on Method Man's lyrics. And I think at least that's like very obviously a commercial. Like they're eating Sour Patch Kids almost immediately. In the Weezer one, it's like a trick. It's like a regular song at first. And then suddenly they like, it turns into the State Farm jingle. I was so
pissed about the Weezer. And if people who haven't seen it, it is basically exactly what Doug says. It's a Weezer song. They're in a studio. The video go along with it is they're in a studio recording it. But, you know, at a certain point, it takes a little bit of a left turn. It is the State Farm jingle. And, you know, obviously, there's some sort of Weezer State Farm partnership. I have less of a problem with those, per se. Then there's a new sort of trend. I don't know if it's new or maybe it's just more explicit now of rappers or, you know, other artists having deals with companies and then like actually working them into the songs. Like case in point, the Tonight song, you know, with Pitbull and Neo and Nadia and those guys.
Yeah.
when that first came out, I would hear it and the intro goes, he mentions Kodak twice in this little kind of, you know, spoken word intro, and when I first heard it, I was like, that's kind of odd, because he rhymes Kodak with Kodak, you know, talking about, you know, I'm not working hard, yeah, picture that with a Kodak, and I thought that's a really dumb line. Then I realized that he's actually being paid by Kodak. He's like one of their, you know, spokespersons. There's this whole Kodak campaign that, you know, Pitbull and Rihanna and a bunch of other artists are part of.
It's funny, because I think in the past, I think in the past rappers did it naturally. Like it started with like alcohol. So like Busta Rhymes would like make a song of Aussie, and that wasn't, he claims he wasn't paid by them, and it was just like what he wanted to write the song about. And then like all these rappers are like, 100 rappers rhymed party with Bacardi in like the 2000s, early 2000s. And then like eventually like rappers started buying alcohol companies and stuff. And then like now when they're rapping about these companies, they know what they're doing. I mean, they're part owners or they're, I mean, didn't in the on the new on the Jay-Z Kanye album, Jay-Z even says something about something like mention Ciroc and give Puff's stock some help or something like that. Just it's all the rapper's fault, is basically what I'm saying.
It is. I remember a story from the Bare Naked Ladies in 1999. They made a music video that probably very few people saw, called for a song called "Call and Answer" in 1999, and in it they used a lot of white VW Bugs. And I was watching some commentary of theirs on the video, and they said that after they made it, they're like, "Hey, I wonder if we can get some money from VW," and they went to VW and they, this is 1999 when the Bugs were huge, and they said, "Well, we're not really having any trouble selling these cars, so no."
We don't need to give you any money, but thanks for
Exactly,
using them.
yeah. And I think there's like even now there's that line between, something that's just used in a video, that's featured prominently, and something that's actually like a paid product placement, and even like something as recent, I think 2009 or 2010 for the telephone video. Lady Gaga rolls her hair up in Diet Coke cans as curlers, and apparently that was not paid because that's just how her mom used to do that, and it was sort of a reference to that. So it's you can never really tell if you're listening to something and somebody's talking about a drink or a certain product, or you're seeing a certain product, that where what the relationship is. So do your homework. Maybe we should make that a thing on the site. Maybe we should make a list of sort of known paid sponsorships of the video.
I absolutely think we should. I mean, we have the budget, and that kind of is kind of plays part in it. I definitely think that that is another thing that you absolutely need to do to the site. So just add that to the list of billion things that you're working on right now. But I think that would be a great feature. I mean, I think that we're looking to be complete with the information about the music video. As much information as we can provide about the music video, we'd like to provide it, And so that would be a big part of it, you know what I mean?
Definitely. And another thing that I was reading an article about, I think an ad agent or what's that ad today or whatever, an ad publication, and they're talking about a really interesting shift in that a lot of artists or record companies are starting to look at music videos with product placement as not a loss leader. In other words, not something that they automatically mo use lose money on. For the Britney Spears "Hold It Against Me" video, in product placement, they made $500,000, which really cuts into the budget of the high budget music video. So I think it's something that's really important, because a lot of artists are saying that they can't make, or record companies are saying they can't make high budget videos anymore without including those references and making the money.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because I don't know, like a lot of these, so many directors are saying that they're benefiting from the fact that music videos aren't on MTV anymore. They're now just on the internet. They have more freedom. They don't have to, live up to, certain standards, because of the having to put these music videos out for MTV or whatever. But it just comes from the artist's, representation instead. You know what I mean? You have to Whoever's paying for the music video, they're gonna want a return, one way or another. And if they can get a guaranteed return up front, I mean, that's still what it's about in the music industry. I don't know how many of the directors ne necessarily are looking at it from that perspective.
Well, a lot of them are pretty savvy in the, I mean, in the way that that goes. And actually, that might be a good lead into our guest of the week, who I'm definitely excited about.
So it's the greatest lead-in probably in the world to this interview.
Mark that. That is the number one lead-in.
Winning lead-in.
So we shouldn't. You probably know by now that our guest on the podcast is Mr. Brian Schlom. Who is the director and editor of some really cool videos? If you just search for him on the site, it's a Brian with a Y, such as "My Ugly Mouth" by Megan Dia, "Why Even Try" by Theophilus. God, you got to say his name. I don't know his name.
Theophilus London is the name.
Theophilus London. There we go. Fireworks
Did
by the
a
Hoof and the Heel, and One That Doug is big, and I are a big fan of "Why Everybody That You Love" by Bomb in the Music Industry, and "Chinatown" by Kitten, which is also a great music video.
I want to hear you say Theophilus London again.
I'm a fan of the site, so
Oh, awesome. Thank you.
it's good to have a site out there that's a resource for like fans and music videos. The picking is far and few in between.
Yeah, well, actually, I saw on your Twitter that you were at were you at Vivo? Vivo's headquarters?
Yeah, I was. I was shooting something. It's pretty funny.
Oh, nice. Was it a music video or was this something for them?
No, I was following this artist. She's like, I guess, a number one recording artist in the UK, but she's just trying to break it here, KDB, and she had like all these meetings all around town. So I was going to like AOL and Vivo and all the stuff. So I got to see their headquarters and stuff. So it was pretty funny.
Are they in New York?
Yeah, they're in Manhattan. I forget the address, but somewhere in Midtown.
Oh, cool.
In some big corporate building. I mean, all the labels are probably in the same building, to be honest with you. I vaguely remember seeing other stuff like that.
Well, they're like the man, and we're kind of like the indie two people operation.
Yeah, well, the thing about Vivo is that they, there's such a great service in, when you think about it, you want the ability to have everything archived, and yet what they've done now is they've put everything with like advertisements, commercials, and then, they don't keep every music video. A lot of videos that you want to watch you can't find, and it's all blocked and the embedding is all blocked. So it's like kind of frustrating because we're in the world of like, sharing and embedding, and they've limited the amount of stuff you can do with that.
Yeah, it's been a problem for us too, because we work off in beds.
Well, that's one of the reasons why Vimeo is cool. Not only as a community, but I think as like a site. They don't have any blocked embeds, and their embeds are always like really good quality.
Yeah, actually, we wanted to ask you eventually about that, about some of the stuff you put on Vimeo, because we're huge Vimeo fans. We'll always put up something that's on Vimeo before, or the Vimeo source before YouTube. But before that, I wanted to ask you. We've talked to a few music video directors, and you're one I think a small group that, when you search for you on Google, you come up as a music video director. And everything on your site reel is music videos. So it's pretty clear that you see yourself, really working in the medium. What drew you to that medium, and how'd you get into it?
Well, really, I guess if the question is what led me into the world of music videos, I don't know. It kind of happened by happenstance. Like I always wanted to get into feature film, and I always wanted to tell, a narrative story. And a lot of my favorite directors, like people like David Fincher or, you know, let's say Michel Gondry for one, they all started out as music video directors, you know, like Spike Jonze and Propaganda and stuff like that. And their visual artistry is just so, like, epic. Cause, I mean, it's beyond, you know, any sort of natural storytelling. So I ended up interning straight out of school for Partisan, which is pretty cool because I actually got to work in a set with Michel Gondry, and that was actually really funny.
Nice.
Would not, unless you're above the line, would not recommend them working anything with them, but that's another story. But, yeah, and, you know, I just saw the world there. I mean, it was really cool because they, you know, they would throw you on set right away and just throw you in the mix, and, you know, it's like a, at that point, that was like the beginning of the, you know, the low-budget videos. You know, they would have you shooting indie videos on, like, an HVX or something like that, or, like, a one of those, like, EX Sony cameras. So, I mean, it was, like, really low-budget. Like, you know, nothing like it is now. I mean, now you could go out and shoot, like, an amazing, you know, feature film, you know, tiny furniture or something like that in a 5D for, like, no money. But, you know, it was interesting. It was interesting to see how innovative, you know, people had to be, especially when, you know, they're on the line with, you know, with labels making all these demands, and, you know, you need to be extremely visionary if you're going to make something with nothing. So, I don't know. I guess I saw that and I wanted to be a part of it, so I just started, you know, making videos whenever I could and promoting them myself, and, you know, eventually, I guess I just started calling myself a music video director, and I have been since.
And what about the medium is appealing to you, you know, after getting into it, you know, interning and then starting to work on your own stuff?
You know, music videos they're a cultural phenomenon. I think that's the most important thing. When you look at a music video, you think of some of the most iconic imagery that you can, like a great commercial. Maybe you'll think about it for a few years, I feel like, unless it's like, you know, something particularly like absolutely revolutionary. But like an amazing music video, like I was just talking the other day about Justify My Love or something like that, or Smack My Bitch Up, that's imagery that lasts, that can last you throughout your entire life, you know what I mean? That's like mind-altering, game-changing stuff, you know? Music videos have the power to create a cultural climate. You know what I mean? Without these Lady Gaga and Nicki Minaj videos, I think fashion would be a lot different for, you know, for younger women and stuff like that. I mean, when you think back at, like, I mean, this is a funny example, actually, but, like, you know, it's just when you think back to, like, those Limp Bizkit videos and that red hat that Fred Durst was wearing, and then everybody was wearing that red Yankees hat or whatever. I mean, that just goes to show you how much, you know, a simple image or picture can change the entire cultural identity of a group of people. And, you know, I really think that's just so cool. It's so awesome. And, you know, that's what I think most music video directors who are interested in the art and the craft of music videos are just, they're striving to create something that, you know, eventually will catch on in terms of, like, a cultural phenomenon. Like, for example, here's another one, Katy Perry, the Motion Theory Katy Perry music video with, like, the Candyland stuff. I mean, think about how many people last Halloween were dressed up as Katy Perry for that Motion Theory video. I mean, just to know, I can't think of any other, besides, like, you know, cult classic indie movies, I can't think of any other medium where somebody would be that inspired to, you know, come up with their own rendition of something like that. And yeah, it's something that I think shapes the world we live in, and I'm really excited to be a part of that.
Is that something that you're, you know, constantly conscious of? You know, you mentioned that, you know, Nicki Minaj kind of molded the fashion based on her videos and Lady Gaga, and, you know, you've done videos for people who kind of have the ability to do the same thing, you know, like Theophilus London is really on kind of the cutting edge of fashion and kind of in that world as well. Do you have to take that into consideration while you're working on a video for somebody like that?
Yeah. I mean, it's a music video kind of like, especially something with a more popular artist, it bridges the gap between art and a commercial. So a lot of the times you have to represent the artist in terms of, you know, their like commercial properties, like you're advertising them to fans. And when you think about that, you know, they have a certain image that they absolutely need to uphold. And I feel like that's why, you know, a lot of really cool artistic videos, like kind of like that Megaforce Kid Cudi one, that's why those videos get canned, because they're focusing more on the art, which is great. I mean, in a perfect world, we could just do that for every video, but, you know, there's definitely this image that you have to maintain. So, like, for example, with Theophilus, you know, I made very little decision when it came to the fashion aspect of that video. And I respect that, and I enjoy that, because I wanted him to bring his own personality and his flavor to the video, because, his previous videos were very, he felt very stilted. He didn't feel very comfortable. So in that one, I just tried to make it as comfortable as I could, and, you know, like, basically what happened on that one. I mean, you know, there were decisions where, you know, he wanted to wear something that was absolutely ridiculous, and I would just say no. But, you know, aside from that, you know, you're branding these people, as much as it hurts to say that. You're branding the Theophilus London video. You know, you have to get shots of his jewelry. You have to get shots of his glasses. You know, you're branding them as something that, you know, somebody can go to their concert or go to their music or something like that. So, I mean, I don't know. It's funny how it just bridges the gap between that. But, you know, honestly, I don't really mind. There are some great commercials. As long as it's done tastefully, then it's okay. But when it gets to the point where it's just like gratuitous amounts of like product placement, and, you know, the video actually starts becoming a commercial, that's when I feel like, you know, younger audiences start to realize that, you know, it's a marketing scheme and they don't buy into it.
So you do still have like a, you know, even though you have to maintain, you know, certain things, like you said, you had to let him pick most of his wardrobe and everything like that. You still feel like you're bringing something to the video yourself. You know, I even read on your blog, somebody said that you directed his video, which they hear means something. So do you still think that, you know, do you still think that, you know, you're still bringing something to the table?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like a lot of these videos, especially now, they're letting artists have more control over the content, which for better or worse, you know, sometimes an artist has a vision and you have to say no. And sometimes an artist has a vision and you're like, okay, well, this is cool. I want to expand on this, make this my own, and create something that we can both look at and say, you know, this is a fantastic video. So, for example, that's what I did with the Theophilus one video. You know, he had a rough idea. I sketched it out. I knew how I wanted to shoot it. I knew how I wanted to present him. I knew I wanted his personality and his flavor as an artist in there. And, you know, I brought my imagery and my way of shooting to the table. I mean, somebody else could have done the same concept and it wouldn't have been the same video. But it's really funny that we're talking about Theophilus, because about 2 months ago, they came to me and asked me if I wanted to do a video that now is his latest video. And I don't know if you've seen it, but I turned it down because I didn't like the concept. And you can see what happened in that video.
Is that the one with the car and the green screen?
Yeah. You know, a lot of times you cannot give, it really stinks, but you can't give, unless they're like somebody who has an incredible, incredible eye and an incredible sense of like space and design, you can't really give an artist full creative control, because as amazing a musician they are, I don't think they understand how, you know, they understand how they want themselves to be represented, but they don't understand what it takes to make that happen. So they could come up with an idea that doesn't work, and, you know, when you tell them, okay, it doesn't work, like, we need to go back, you know, in their head, they're seeing something else, and everybody else is seeing it a different way. And when it comes to fruition, you know, they say, oh, I don't like this. This isn't what I thought it was, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it's tough, and that's why I turned that down, because I knew that, you know, I would have little creative control over that, and I wanted to you know, shape something where, you know, you could have a sense of collaboration. Like, I think most people are interested in collaborating when it comes to videos. You know, you don't really want no feedback from the band because, you know, you want them to be excited about the video, but at the same token, you don't want them to be too involved because they, you know, they really don't understand the repercussions of, like, you know, some of the shots that they want in addition to it, you know, they just won't work.
So are artists or maybe, you know, the management companies, are they coming to you with a basic sketch, or are you putting, you know, concepts out to them? How does your process work, or how do you prefer to work in that way?
Well, you know, it's really varied. I think what happens now, what's been happening recently, is artists have been sending out, you know, briefs that just say the budget and where they want to shoot and, like, the bare necessities of the video, and they don't really say anything else, and then they get a slew of treatments and they don't like any of them. And you get some briefs where the artists lay out what they want, and, you know, they want you to be creative and expand on that, and those are probably ones with the most that would yield the most success for those people. They know in which creative direction they want to go in, what type of imagery they want, but they're not too specific. And then there are the briefs that you get where they're literally note for note pretty much exactly what the band wants, which, for better or worse, you know, that's what they're going to get, and those videos are usually not successful. And if you, you know, if you try to pitch on that and try to bring anything else to the table, it's usually shot down. So, I mean, that seems to be, you know, the current climate of what it is. I think recently, now that the budgets are so small and that, you know, people are beginning to sign bands like, you know, like Cults, for example, that's a band that has, you know, their hands dipped in their music videos tremendously. Whereas previously, like, if you had an artist like, let's say, yeah, I don't know, like Britney Spears or somebody like that, I feel like, you know, you'd probably be able to have a little more creative freedom because they really wouldn't care. They would just show up and do it and do whatever. But I feel like, you know, since a band like Cults is so involved in their videos and their processes, you know, that, like, you know, they're going to scrutinize everything you write, or they're going to, you know, look at your cut, and it might end up being harder to shoot a Cults video than something for a bigger band. So it's kind of funny how that works out.
Yeah, Britney Spears will just wear whatever you bring to the set, no questions asked.
Well, I mean, you know what? It depends. In terms of fashion, I feel like, you know, that there's a lot of collaboration involved in that. Like when I was saying, you know, there's an image that these people are looking to maintain. You know, unless it's something like totally different, you know, that you're trying to do for the video. Like you want them to dress up in, like, you know, 80s style clothing or something like that, or something incredibly stylized. That's one thing. But usually, you know, people are really specific on what they want to wear and what styles they want to wear. But for example, like, you know, all the Cults videos, like the Cults briefs and stuff like that that they send out. I don't know why I keep on talking about Cults, but I guess since they're just sending out so many briefs, I can talk about it. And they've been saying that they don't really want performance, or that they don't really want this or that. And, you know, I know my friend Dave shot a Cults video, and they were really hyper-specific in the casting and the edits and how the effects were going to be and stuff like that. I mean, they were really, really hands-on. Whereas, you know, I've done videos where, you know, the artist is just like, okay, great. You know what I mean?
Well, that's what one thing I wanted to ask you about is the casting, because I feel like that's a thread, you know, going through your videos. The people, you know, not just the artists, the other people cast in the videos are, I don't know, there's just something interesting about them. They're interesting to watch. It's pretty clear that, you know, somebody just wasn't thrown in there because they're around on the day. You know, do you handle casting? And I was wondering if you could talk about, you know, your process behind that.
Yeah, casting is something that I think I value and could actually make or break a video. And, you know, I think if you're looking at my videos versus, you know, my friends' videos, I absolutely have to make sure that people look beautiful or interesting or whatever. They just need to have that right look. I don't think I would ever put my friend in a video or something like that, unless it was just like a humorous kind of a thing, because I don't know, I feel like that adds to the magic, you know what I mean? When you're watching a video and it has like these crazy effects, or it has this imagery that's supposed to look beautiful, and it ends up looking like, you know, it's like your neighbor on the screen, I think that just like takes away from the magic, especially when, you know, you're trying to make like a $500 music video look like a $50,000 music video, you know what I mean? You just have to make sure that every single element of it looks beautiful. Yeah. So, I'm hyper specific with stuff like that. I'm extremely picky. And I think, you know, if anything, I wouldn't necessarily say that that's the cause for any success, but I would say that it definitely helps.
And being in Brooklyn, I mean, there's a lot of, especially in the people that I've talked to who've seen your videos, there's a lot of hipster crushes going on. Does it make it a little bit easier in Brooklyn? I'm just saying that because we've in the videos we've seen that were shot in Brooklyn, the people are noticeably more beautiful, especially the women. Do you have any comment on that?
Well, I will say this. All right, are you from LA?
No, I am not.
Are you? So you're in New York?
No, I'm in the boondocks. I'm in Raleigh, North Carolina, and Doug's in Florida.
Oh wow. Oh wow. Well, I guess I'll explain this to you coming from North Carolina as simple as I can. In LA, there's hardly any diversity when it comes to creative work. So if you're in LA, everybody there is for film. Everybody wants to be a bleach blonde hair, you know, actress that looks like, you know, has the most generic look so they can be molded and made into whatever the machine wants to make them into. Hardly any models, hardly any photographers, hardly any sort of anything, really. And in New York, you have a completely different world. You have a world that's focused, you know, as much on film and as much as on photography and fashion and writing and publishing. And, you know, there's the art world and stuff like that. I mean, you have just so much more in New York. You could go gallery hopping in LA and, you know, you could be done after, you know, maybe one or two different places. In New York, you could literally just go hopping from place to place for like, you know, 48 hours. I mean, it's ridiculous the amount of diversity that you get just from living in a place, you know, like New York. And I'm really grateful that I was able to continue my career here, because it's like if I went out to a bar in LA, I'd meet up with somebody who was another aspiring director, and you know, you really can't make a connection with that. If I go out to a bar here, I could meet somebody who works for a magazine who could get me a job, you know, on a photo shoot or something like that.
So yeah, I wanted to ask you about your team, because it seemed there are people that show up in a few different places, and I noticed that you're credited as director and editor in a lot of your videos, and Pat Scola turns up a few places as colorist and DP, and your videos look fantastic, and you know, usually there's a little bit of a team behind that. You know, I think a lot of people who make music videos nowadays are like either a one-man team or really, really maybe a two-man team or something like that. I mean, what has having, you know, a little bit of a team and, you know, people that you can come back to creatively kind of done for your work?
I think first and foremost, you know, having somebody who you work with all the time, it's extremely easy to be like, oh, do this kind of shot, you know, without really any sort of expression or analysis or anything. You just tell them, remember this shot, do that. And then, you know, it just makes you work incredibly more efficiently. But also, you know, it helps you to you know, to play off of each other. I think it leads to the collaboration. If I'm working with somebody for the first time, they might not be as apt to recommend, you know, stylistic changes to me as Pat would. You know, I feel like Pat, you know, can sometimes jump into the director's seat, and, you know, he knows what I'm going for because we've worked together so much, and he, you know, he has the ability to make suggestions to me that I think they really benefit, you know, what I do. And I really couldn't ask for a better DP or a better friend. And he's a great guy. So working with your friends and working with people who you're familiar with, I think is the best feeling in the world. He has a great eye. I trust him. I don't understand why he's not famous.
Same with us.
I wonder if you could take us through more literal terms, take the Kit in Chinatown video and maybe kind of discuss in places where that relationship kind of has helped and what, you know, kind of what pieces, you know, kind of came from that relationship.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at that video, I'm sure you can only imagine how many different shots and setups that we had to have. And I had to cut out at least like 10 to 15 of them. So if you look at my original storyboards, it was like shot after shot after shot after shot after shot after shot, after shot, all different things. We had like 3 different locations and stuff like that. And, you know, I was able to meet with him beforehand, and, you know, we had a long talk about stylistically how we wanted everything to be lit and, you know, the coloring and everything. And we knew, you know, I was able to tell him very easily, you know, exactly how these loops are going to work. Pat was actually in meetings with me with Logan, who did all the effects. So he was able to know firsthand. I mean, he really stepped it up. I mean, that's the best part about having, you know, your friends working with you, is that, you know, he's not going to demand another prep fee if he just comes along to this meeting and, you know, realizes how, you know, what exactly the plates that we're going to need are and exactly how everything needs to be lit in order for it to work for post and stuff like that. I mean, he was really just on board. And, you know, at that point, I could just be like, you know, we had a conversation, we knew stylistically exactly what was going to happen. So, I mean, in those moments, you know, even though we had mapped out exactly where each shot was going to be, you know, there were a lot of times where I just had to be like, all right, shot here in the kitchen, this framing, make it look moody, go. And he'd be able to hit it spot on with like very few tweaks afterwards. So, I mean, just being able to rush and being able to do that within the multiple shots and setups, I mean, it was a godsend. It really, I don't think I could have done that video with somebody who I hadn't worked with before. Otherwise, they would have wanted to kill me by the end.
How many days was did you guys shoot that video through?
We shot it for 2 days. I think in total, must have been like 4 locations. There was the escarpment in LA, which everybody shoots at. So we shot in every single room in the escarpment and outside. The second day, we went over to a friend's place. He has actually, he owned a house that had a log cabin attached to it. So we shot in the log cabin and the house and outside. And then from there, we went outside into these tunnels and we lit off all the fireworks. So actually that, the shot of the guy doing like fireworks windmills, that's actually me. We did that after everybody left in a tunnel in East Hollywood. It was really sketchy, but it was awesome.
Well, speaking of fireworks, another video that we wanted to ask you about is the Hoof and the Heel fireworks video.
Cool.
And it's such a, I don't want to say simple concept, but there's not a lot of, you know, special effects or anything to go with it, but it's really sort of, you know, really draws you in. I think it's a really fantastically done video. And I was wondering if you could talk about, you know, the concept for that and where that came from.
Well, basically the story behind that is, you know, around that time, I had been doing videos where, you know, I would ask for advice on what videos I should be doing. And people would say, you know, oh, well, you can't turn down any opportunities. You should be doing anything you can get. And if anybody's listening right now, don't follow that advice. You pick me when you first start out, because you start making all this crap that really has no use to you whatsoever. I mean, I guess looking back on it, you know, it helps shape you and makes you become more confident as a director, but it's not something that you know, you're really going to look back on and say, hey, you know, I'm using this for my reel. So at that point, I had just finished up shooting a movie for my friend, which was called So Long Lonesome. It's like, it was this feature that we did, kind of like this weird ambient mumblecore movie. And it screened at like the Zero Film Festival or something. And Fireworks was one of the songs that was licensed to be in the video, or in the movie rather. So I remember just sitting and watching the segment and listening to the song and being like, man, this song needs a video. Like, this song's really good. So I contacted the band directly, who they loved the movie. They loved the way it was shot. And I was basically just given free rein to do whatever I want. I let them know, you know, the storyline and what I was going to do. And we just, you know, basically I borrowed a whole bunch of stuff from all my friends. Like, I had a friend who, you know, runs a vintage store, so we got all the clothing and all that stuff. I found people who were willing to get naked for free, so that was nice. And, you know, basically we took something that, we made something really out of nothing. You know, we really didn't have much, and we turned it into this video that, I would say, you know, for a band that's that I think even at this point is still unknown, I think the video did really well, considering, you know. So I'm proud of how that video turned out and stuff. But that was a really, that was a great project for me, and I think it turned out really well. And it was just a great way to be able to interact with people and that create something that, you know, stylistic and narrative at the same time. And that was something that I really liked. If I could break out, you know, all my my narrative director filmmaking skills, which is always really fun. So, you know, there are hardly any videos that have subtext, and I feel like that video has subtext, so I was kind of proud of that.
To follow up that, I could take the high road and talk about the subtext. Unfortunately, with the Filmed Insert podcast, we very rarely take the high road. So I was going to talk about the naked people. Because Adam and I, before the podcast, were talking about, you know, where this video would have played, you know, 15 years ago when most videos were consumed on MTV. And I noticed that you've actually had videos on MTV, you know, the Theophilus London video played on MTV, whereas, you know, Fireworks could never. And so, you know, I was wondering, is there like a, you know, do you prefer something with some more freedom where you know you can kind of do whatever you want because it's only going to be digested by, you know, the web community, and you can put that not safe for work tag on it and people will understand that there's going to be something in there? Or, you know, do you like better making something that's going to be in front of a larger audience?
Well, this question is really interesting because I think when you're asking it, you're thinking about it from a mindset that doesn't really appreciate the power that the internet has with the music video world. I think that if I made it editable, if I made that video, you know, just cut and dry, it probably wouldn't have been seen by anybody, even if I did get it on MTV, because I really don't think that, you know, broadcast has that much power anymore. I mean, a video that's hyper-popular on YouTube probably has more power than a video that's being played all the time on all, like, five MTV stations. And I think it's just because people appreciate and, you know, mostly consume all their music videos on the internet at this point. I rarely, you know, talk to anybody who's seen my stuff on TV. And it's kind of interesting when it is on TV because you're like, okay, well, I still haven't seen it.
You know, right.
I guess it is on TV. But, you know, I think that I love this new freedom where you're able to just, if you want to put something in a video, you can, you know what I mean? I just love that concept. And really, if it's editable, it's editable, but I think people appreciate, you know, that newfound freedom. Like, I think when you think about it, like a video like Klaxons or something like that, like the Sam one, like that is such an amazing video. And to think that we live in a world where, you know, let's say 15 years ago, that couldn't have been made. You know what I mean? It's just absolutely, it's a phenomenon. And even when you look at Lady Gaga, for example, I mean, you know, Lady Gaga is like what now, like the Michael Jackson of the music video world now, I guess. But, you know, her videos are even uncensored on the internet and stuff like that. And it's just the amount of creative freedom that you get when you're not tampered by, like, the standard and practices people is just, it's phenomenal. I love it. You know, like, when you do stuff for MTV, you get feedback like, oh, you can't have that shot because it has somebody in a bikini, but, like, you didn't pan up to their head. So, like, you can't have that shot. And it's just like, what are you talking about? But nobody's even going to notice that, but it's just the amount of freedom that you get. And then the ability to say, all right, well, you know, why not put some tasteful nudity in, you know, in my video? I can. It's for the internet. There's nobody's going to stop me. You know, nobody's going to censor me.
Now, for some,
that's really, you know, I thought they were going to try and censor Kitten. I really did. I don't know what happened with that, but they were, you know, because there's so much dangerous stuff in that video, and we didn't have a stunt coordinator, and we didn't have anything, and all that stuff is real. Like, when they were breaking the glass, that's real. When they're laying stuff on fire, it's real, and it was really fucking dangerous. And, you know, I guess that's a tangent. I totally thought that they were going to be like, cut out all the fire or something like that, but they didn't, so props to them. But yeah, you know, you get all the things that really, like, push a video, that make it controversial, that make it, you know, really edgy. You know, if you have people there taking it out, I feel like it makes less of a cultural impact, you know. And to be, you know, on the other side, banning a video makes it just as popular, if not more popular, than if it isn't banned. So I'm all for that sort of stuff. Because it's like, think of a video like Smack My Bitch Up, where that was one of the first videos that I can remember. It wasn't the first, but it was one of the first videos that I can remember, where there was a cultural backlash to it. And when you look at it, I mean, it was amazing. You wouldn't have videos like Cinnamon Love Deluxe or whatever, or movies like Enter the Void without it. I mean, that really set the tone for a lot of that imagery. And, you know, that was a banned video. And that made it so much more popular. So I'm all for it, you know.
For a guy who is co-founding a music video database on the internet, Doug, you were kind of selling out music videos on the internet there.
No. I think that the question got, I said it wrong.
No.
That's what happens.
I'm just giving you a hard time, but
yeah, I know you are.
But no, I remember seeing that the edited version, like the heavily edited version of Smack My Bitch Up on MTV way back in the day, and thinking, Why does it have to be the way I work? And I get the actual full version of it.
Right. It gets you thinking. It gets you thinking. And that's, you know, like, another one I can think of is, I don't know if you remember the like, Ava Adore video about the Smashing Pumpkins.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The concept is he's walking in all these rooms, and then he walks into, like, this room where everybody's having an orgy, and literally the entire frame is censored. And it's, like, that sort of, like, tongue-in-cheek, like, you know, subtly, like, you know, banning parts of the video, or, like, you know, doing stuff in spite of, like, standards of practice and stuff like that. I mean, that edge makes things popular, and I think people appreciate that, you know?
One of the other videos that I wanted to ask you about, because...
Wait, let me just say, before you do, that's just a leading question, and I got the greatest answer ever on the history of this podcast by that horrible leading question. So
I'm not
selling
that
anybody.
Oh, thank you,
anybody.
I guess. Thank you.
Now, on this podcast, we love certain types of videos. And one of the ones we love is party videos. And I was pleasantly surprised to find one in your canon, the Somerset The Boys You Do video. Because there's a lot of glitter. There's a lot of partying and stuff like that. But I found it interesting. It just because it came from you. I was wondering where did that video come from? How did you get in contact with the Somerset?
Well, remember how I said earlier that, they said don't take every single offer you get.
We got picks. We got so many picks. Doug, you got a pick?
Oh, I'm so excited about my pick. I like genuinely excited about my pick because it could be one of my favorite videos. I'm so excited about it. I'm gonna savor it a little bit more and let you go first.
Oh man. Now I won't even be able to concentrate on mine because I'm thinking about your pick.
What my pick could be or what it will be. I mean, do you know?
No, I have no clue.
I mean,
But
you know. All right. No, go. You go.
so okay, so I like if you listen to the whole interview with Brian, I mentioned party videos because I love music videos. There's so many of them, they sort of fall into a different categories, and I kind of want to add that to the site because there's like party videos, there's just sort of like really lazy setup videos. And
Is
then,
that the name of the category, lazy setup videos that you
yes,
would put?
lazy setup videos, like a Nickelback video or something.
I'm briefly trying to figure out who would be listening to this portion of the podcast, but not the whole interview.
I don't know, maybe our
It's like,
parents.
skip forward past this interview. Let's just find out the picks. That's what I'm here for.
Well, this one is just came out, and it is the music video for Adele's song "Someone Like You," and I picked it for a number of reasons. Number one, it falls into two categories, which I enjoy. It is a walk and talk category, wherein the artist just walks around. It is an extremely easy video to do. I'm sure it's not easy, but it's a one shot thing. There's not really an editor. The
Like a
person just
steady, walking into the camera, steady cam.
not Steadicam, just like I don't know if you even know if this is Steadicam. Probably not. Maybe you can never tell. It's actually filmed on kind of old school film. It's in Paris, right next to the Seine, and Adele is walking along singing the song. If you haven't heard the song, it's a very poignant E song. She sang it at the 2001 MTV Music Awards. And other great videos that belong in this category are videos like Coldplay's Yellow, where Chris Martin is walking on a beach singing the song, and a whole other, and the Bittersweet Symphony by the band, I can't remember, the Verve Pipe, I think. And where he's just walking on a street. It's a walk and talk. I like those kind of videos.
There's a
And
lot of rap videos like that too, a ton of rap videos.
exactly, yeah. I mean, it's setup wise, it's easy. It cost wise, it's very effective. And if you have an artist that is able to really kind of capture and hold your attention for a music video, it's tough because you're just sitting there, you're just walking around and singing the video.
Is it one shot?
It's one shot, yeah. It's always one shot. For a walk and talk. However, this one also has another category, which is actually not usually, it's kind of rare nowadays, which is the stop and sing. The stop and sing is where you are sing lip syncing the video, but you stop at a certain point. And famously used on the Anton Corbijn version of One by U2, where Bono stop singing a portion of the song, and it was very poignant in this. And in the Adele "Someone Like You" video, she stops and looks out at the Seine for a verse, and goes back on the chorus. And I think actually in the Tyler, the Creator Yonkers video, he stops for a little bit. Do you?
So is it not a walk and talk video? I'm still trying to. wrap my head completely around Walk and Talk. So like, there's a lot of rap videos, especially a lot of recent rap videos. Some that come to mind are like some Mac Miller videos and stuff, where he's always walking at the camera, but there's maybe three or four different places, and they're cutting from one to one to one, or maybe he'll go from start to finish in a location, and then start to finish in another location, but he's still always right into the camera.
I think,
is that still a walk and talk?
I think maybe if we amend or change the definition of walk and talk, that they are walking and talking with the music, and then add a category of a one shot. Because
yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah, because so this falls into three categories: then the one shot, the walk and talk, and the stop and sing, sing and stop, or whatever. So it's interesting in that because you start. I'm interested in kind of identifying these patterns, and even though, you know, all these music videos are very different, Adele kind of falls into those categories a lot. She, I don't know if it's just the people she works with, but she, all her videos oftentimes fall into one or more sort of established categories, especially the one for Rolling in the Deep. It's a house song. A song that takes place, the music video takes place in some sort of rundown house. That's definitely a trope. So anyway, my pick is Adele, Someone Like You. My dad loves that song, so.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. He was here and he made everybody listen to it in the living room of my apartment.
That's totally true, isn't it?
It is. We have an Apple TV and he made us look up, find the MTV Music Award, performance on YouTube.
Were you like listening to music and everyone's like, oh, have you heard this song? Oh, have you heard this song? Oh, have you heard this song? Or was it just kind of like you guys are sitting around? It's like, oh, have you heard Adele perform? And you were like, no. And he's like, oh God, you got to hear it.
There was the second one, the latter, because we were about to go to dinner. We're gonna go to dinner, and he's like, we gotta hear this song, yeah. And this is something like. The video was somehow like reversed, so he spent like a long time explaining to everybody like it was like reversed in the actual performance. Anyway, that's my pick. I'm interested to hear yours, Doug.
I'm so excited about my pick. As I previously stated, I guess I'll try to categorize this one a little bit. I don't know, think it fits into any of the categories that you created. But it starts as a performance video, which is definitely a category. It starts kind of as a performance video. It's Chromeo When the Night Falls, by the way, is the artist and song. And it starts kind of as a performance video. Chromeo is performing the song on stage. And then it kind of evolves into a chase video. You know, like a Beatles-esque kind of chase people down, you know, chase the art, you know, girls chasing the artist or whoever, you know, chasing the artist.
Right.
But the device that is used in this video to change this video from a performance video to a chase video is the greatest thing to ever be in a music video ever that I've ever seen ever. What happens in this video is Chromeo is performing on stage, and as they make eye contact with the women in the bar, they just burst into pregnancy. Like, they're just standing there looking at Chromeo, make eye contact with Chromeo, and then, like, boosh, just immediately burst into pregnancy, but like belly bursts out and like buttons pop and they like fly backwards and they like get up and they're like 9 months pregnant and then they just like are after Chromeo. So I'm so, like so excited about this video. It's directed by Daniels, by the way, which is like they're a directors collective, and they're both named Daniel, and they directed some really, like, the effects in their music video are like really, music videos are really eye catching, and all of their music videos are great. But anyway, back to the more important subject, which is these women who burst into pregnancy. They are after Chromeo, so Chromeo then runs away from the bar. And as they're running away from in the bar, there's more women in the streets, more women everywhere. And every time they see a woman, they see a woman immediate pregnancy, and they're all just after them. And I'm pretty sure Marilyn Heidecker's in this video, Tim Heidecker's wife. You may remember her from the Matt Wells video with Tim Heidecker in it. But she's in some of the other Daniels videos too. God, everyone needs to watch this video. Why are you even still listening to me and not watching this video? Because it is just, it's amazing. It's the greatest.
It is a great video.
No, I feel bad for any other picks of the week ever.
Oh, because I feel so bad for Adele.
I feel bad. All right, she's like, she had to go. It had to go first.
It had to. I don't even know what we could. We gotta. Oh man. See, the thing about this video is that the pregnancies are so explosive. They will knock the women off their feet. They will send them catapulted over a railing. It is
burst into pregnancy is the only way to describe it.
Right.
And Chromio starts to use it to their advantage.
Yeah, well, we can't give it away, but there's a twist.
There's such a twist.
Well,
it's not like M. Night Shyamalan twist. I guess a few updates, Adam. By the way, are you messing with a pen now?
No, that is that's me clipping my nails. Is that the sound?
Yeah, sweet. Have you picked up any of my pen clicking sounds?
No, I actually haven't heard it in any of the podcasts.